Welcome to the Property Nomads podcast, and we are breaking new ground here, no pun intended, because today we are going to be having a great chat with someone who is very in-depth in land development. Now, as you appreciate, we've had on this podcast before, we've had planning consultants and architects, and they've been really, really useful and great content. But this particular individual is ingrained into land development, has a plethora of experience doing this. So we're going to touch base on the basics today, and we will go from there. So really looking forward to this chat, loads of great content for yourself, breaking new ground. And Jerome, thank you. You're going to introduce yourself, but thank you very much for taking the time out of your day to have a chat.
Thanks, Robert. Just want to thank you for asking me to come on this and reaching out, and really, really looking forward to sharing my insights with your audience, as you said, a relatively new strategy for your platform. So my name's Jerome Roith. I'm 49 years old. I've been in property since 1994. Started out life as an estate agent, making the tea and doing the photocopying. I don't even know whether they have positions like that anymore. And before the days of smartphones and stuff like that, certainly before the days of podcasts and socials, and went on a bit of a journey, really. Estate agency, set my own estate agency up, got into commercial property consultancy, buying and selling individual units in low value locations in London. And then things took a turn in about 2013 with the advent of permitted development, which is when it first came in. Joined up with a mate of mine I was at school with. We scaled a few office to residential permitted development schemes all around England. That's when I started understanding the benefit of buying something without planning permission, which we'll probably go into more detail today. And understanding that scaling a business and hitting critical mass is how you make money, basically. And then decided to go it alone 2014, beginning of 2015, which was only acquiring opportunities without planning consent, and predominantly they've all been land. There's different types of land which we could also go into, provide people with a basic background on what type of land we look at and what type of land you can get planning on. And really it's just mushroomed from there. I've built new build, I've done office to resi, you know, rip out, conversion, forward sold them, raised bridging finance, raised development finance, traded sites, held sites. Yeah, pretty much got quite a good feel for the sector, but always learning.
Fair enough. I think the learning aspect is imperative, and that's when we speak to various people on the podcast, everyone says pretty much the same thing, that the learning aspect of it, that it's always a new day, there's always something new to learn and something to get better at.
Yeah, which is the reason why I try and surround myself with people that are older than me.
Wisdom as it is. I appreciate that. Very, very good advice there, Jerome. So you mentioned obviously a lot about permitted development there. But today we're going to be looking at land. Now, of course, I'm not able to speak for every single listener. When I think about land, I think maybe an open field, plopping a new build development on. That's normally the first thing that comes to my head, rightly or wrongly. But you mentioned there's different types of land. Are you able to go through a couple of examples of different types of land?
Yeah, sure. So let's start with brownfield land, which is the most easily recognisable to all of us, which could be a garage, an MOT testing station, anything that's previously developed or has been built on. That's the classification of brownfield land. So what you're sat in, what I'm in at the moment, this office building I'm in, it's a brownfield site that just happens to have an office building on it. Your house, whenever that was built originally, that was a piece of land. So brownfield is where I suggest people begin, because you'd call that entry level land development, because the government's planning policy is development is in favor of brownfield before anything else. And in other words, it's the easiest to get planning permission for and has the most flexible planning strategy on those sites. Because if something's already been on it, you're going to get something on it in the future. And if it's got something on it now, your chances of getting planning permission to knock it down and build something new on it are much greater because it's previously developed land.
Okay, makes sense.
That is what the majority of developers will look to buy, is brownfield land, for all the reasons that I've just given. Then number two on the land hierarchy is greenfield, which is what you described just now. It's not greenbelt, but it's a field with nothing on it, probably in a semi-rural or out-of-town location, where the developer would have the vision to see that something could go on it. But having your vision and getting planning permission are two totally different things. And the harder the site is to get planning, the more risky it is, but the greater the rewards. I think the whole land development game is all about your appetite for risk. Because, you know, we're not going out and buying a vanilla buy-to-let where we know what's the net income is going to be each month for the next 3 years. Then number three on difficulty, being the most difficult, is greenbelt, which is what you see people demonstrate against. We don't want development on greenbelt. Don't touch the greenbelt. The reality is 95% of this country is greenbelt. Those fields you see when you're on the train traveling up and down the UK is greenbelt. And I completely understand why they want to protect it. You can get planning on greenbelt. I've never tried to, but I know people that have.
Okay. So brownfield, just so I've got this right. So is it, you say brownfield, greenfield and greenbelt, just so have I got that correct?
Correct.
So I remember, completely off topic for a second, I remember a stat from a while ago, I don't know if it's still true, where as a proportion of the land in the UK, there's a high percentage is golf courses and is housing, which I don't know if that's still true, but I found that amazing when I got told that years ago. Anyway, so if people were, and again, appreciate there's so many different, you know, property strategies out there, and, you know, people might want to start with buy to let, people, yeah, it's up to them what people want to do. But what effectively what I'm hearing is if people are thinking of just going straight into some form of land development, then your suggestion should be that start looking at the brownfield, just because, you know, it's not a guarantee necessarily that you will get something on it, but the precedent's already been set, so the odds are in your favour.
Correct. The pitfalls are something that I always like to explain to people, because I think that we live in a society, particularly on social media, which no doubt you'll be familiar with, is that everything's painted as all rosy in the garden. And it's actually one of my missions in my business life to educate people with the truth. And the brownfield land game is more competitive than the other land types. And the pitfalls are, A, the competition, but B, if you're buying something that might have had a garage on top of it or a little factory or an industrial estate, what you've got to be careful of is what's in the ground. In other words, what's under the ground.
Okay.
So we're in the process of buying a site that the guy runs a haulage company from, but used to sell petrol from there up to 10 years ago. So that's as pure brownfield as you can get. So these are all things that we have to look into and everyone else needs to. What's under the ground? What's there that you can't see? So those are the pitfalls of it.
Would there be, I appreciate that's a really good pitfall to point out. The second thing that, again, comes into my mind, and I don't know if this is something you can elaborate on, is if there wasn't some form of permitted development route, then from, again, whether it's just social media and from people I speak to networking, planning can be a bit of a pain in the backside sometimes, and that's mainly down to said councils. Are these things that you've experienced over the years where you're up against effectively a set of dinosaurs? It's been an absolute challenge.
Yeah, so let's just talk about the planning system briefly, because that's what we do and we're involved with that every day of our lives. And my experience is it's getting harder to get planning and it's more expensive to get planning. But what that does for me, it makes me even more determined. Mm-hmm. Because there's this old adage, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. There are local authorities that are pro-development, that they want to see developers in their area building new homes and creating environments for people to live in, because it creates employment through the construction. It brings money into a local economy and it creates council tax receipts as well. On the other side to it, you have local authorities that their default position is that we're not going to give you planning approval, why we should. And COVID has been an interesting scenario in the planning world, because they're all, these council planning departments are under-resourced now, because a lot of people have left. They've gone into private practice. We see that all the time. So if they're under-resourced, we all know what that means. They're not looking at your planning applications in a timely manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That knock-on effects are knock-on effects. I think that's a very prudent point. So again, I'm just trying to think through layman's terms. So we sort of said that if you're starting and you're looking at land, then brownfield might be easier. Then we've got a second challenge, could be the council and the area in which you want to do it. And I imagine also that people would be thinking, well, this is all fine, but then is there a time scale? Because obviously you're not exactly necessarily, you know, producing the yield straight away. But secondly, how do you go about finding these sorts of sites and areas? Is it a local plan, speaking to commercial agents? How would you start that, Jerome? If you were starting again, how would you do that?
So there's a lot of noise on social media regarding DTV, direct to vendor, which we've all seen the reels and the posts on it. And our experience right now is that DTV is the way forward for us. And that's coming from someone that's reasonably well experienced. So yes, Robert, you're quite right. Commercial agents, chartered surveyors, rural agents, they can be called, are a source of opportunity. DTV, we use Land Insight. I have no tie-up with them. I know there's a number of mapping software tools on the market, Nimbus, Searchland, Land Insight, probably a load more I don't even know about. We use Land Insight as different packages. And we have someone within the organization that's, that role is to purely create these direct to vendor campaigns. However, you might be thinking, where do we look in terms of location? Because it's okay identifying the sites without planning, because all these mapping software products, subscription services, you click on the site, it tells you if it's got planning or not. You click on the site, it'll tell you what the gross development value, the comparable sales evidence is. You've got everything at your fingertips, but how do you know where to start? And this is now moving us into completely different genres from the perspective of this podcast, but that comes down to how much money do you want to make in terms of the areas that you target and the value of the finished product.
Yeah, that's appetite for risk and having the right team around you with the right network, with the right understanding. And again, these are things that I'm sure, as you've seen on social media as well, people make it look very easy and quick. Trust me, it's anything but. You've got to take time to build relationships, nurture them, and you know, who knows what that's going to lead to further on down the line. That's my experience over 6 or 7 years of doing this. Obviously, you've been doing this since 1994. Is that a sentiment you would agree with, Jerome?
I believe that there is too much emphasis on instant gratification and that I want it all now culture. I understand it. but I don't believe it has any legs thinking like that. If you're going to get into land and development and planning game, you have to be patient, which I would imagine is the same way as if you're building a portfolio of buy-to-lets or HMOs. It's no different. The fundamental difference is the cash flow. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we must go into this with our eyes wide open. You're buying an asset that probably isn't producing any income and has no uplift in value until you get planning permission, which is the reason why everyone's jumped onto permitted development, because it's a 56-day determination. So you've got your kind of two-month hit, basically. This, people ask me all the time, how long does it take? What do we need to do? And my answer is always the same. It depends what you're trying to do. How big is the site? How many units? And what's your use? But let's give people a flavor. Let's give your audience some time scales. Because for me, the reason why I like doing these is that if one person comes off this and goes out and does what we do, then it means that this podcast has worked.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this is about for me. So let's say you want to go and buy a brownfield site and you want to build five houses on it, you know, kind of entry level stuff, right? New build in a reasonable value location where a house is worth £300,000, new build built, three bed starter home. You'll have a planning pre-app, which is cool, which is the slang terminology is a pre-app, where you get in front of the planning officer with a couple of drawings. It's inexpensive. You book a meeting and they'll tell you before you submit planning whether it's of interest to them. Okay. Step one, let's call that 8 weeks, including getting the feedback. If the feedback is positive, you'll start work on creating the planning application with your team. The drawings, the various professional reports on a site of this size, it shouldn't take longer than another 3 months to prepare and submit the actual planning application. So we're now in for 5 months. Let's put a contingency. We'll call that 6 months. If the site is under a hectare in size, they legally have to determine the application within 8 weeks. So what a really good idea to do when you're starting out is you're going to start with the smaller sites anyway, but if they're under a hectare, they have to determine it in 8 weeks. So let's add that on to the pre-app, the preparation and submission, and the 8 week determination. We could be at 7 or 8 months. We're now factoring in a year. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're factoring in 12 months. And if you've bought the site well enough, or you've secured the site in an advantageous way, that planning consent, if you've done your numbers right, should be increasing the value of that site the day you get planning permission. And then you have a decision to make. Do you want to sell it on or do you want to build it?
Okay, makes perfect sense. The thing I'm taking away, and I'm trying to think of listeners as well, is that when you're dealing with these sorts of things, that these things are going to take time. There's going to be a lot of bureaucracy involved, potentially. And that people need to allow for that time, but also importantly, secure the site advantageously by obviously going through the numbers with a fine tooth comb and maybe having a good vendor that you could work with to create a win-win situation.
So I believe that the biggest mistakes people make, which I think is important to talk about mistakes, mm-hmm. is not knowing how to analyze the site. Mm-hmm. So if you're new into property, the majority of the strategies that you will come across, no one will ever mention this, really. Okay. And I've never really understood why, because to me, this makes perfect sense, because the strategies that are pushed around by property education companies and social media platforms are income producing strategies. We call this a capital strategy, uh-huh. where you're going to make a sum of money, let's call it a lump for common vernacular, and you're going to be able to deploy that profit into those other strategies or into another planning gain deal. I believe it always comes down to one thing, everything we do, Robert, which is our mind.
Yeah, I'm smiling like a Cheshire cat. It's something I couldn't agree with more, that it's start with the end in mind and what you're trying to achieve out of this. But also, as you quite rightly say, that if you're going to go down this particular route, this particular strategy, it's a lump sum strategy at the end. This will not produce you £2,000, £3,000, £4,000, £5,000 a month, because it doesn't give you the cash flow per se. And I think if people can get that in their heads and understand that difference, there's no harm in doing things side by side. But if you're going to go down this route, you'll get good lump sums every now and then, and you can supplement that elsewhere. That's a fantastic point, Jerome. Couldn't agree more.
Okay, so mindset, my experience of what I do. So before, when I started, there was no books or training or anything like that. Okay, there were no podcasts. I couldn't pay my money and sit with someone. So I didn't really know about buy-to-lets and HMOs and income and all that stuff. So this is how I started. I basically, my career has been back to front in the eyes of society and how we're led to believe we should do it. So I think, what I'm saying to your audience, that one person on here that wants to go into this straight away, that's what I did, because I didn't know anything else. It was straight into buying something that had an uplift potential in it to add value to trade it on.
Yeah, makes perfect sense to me. I think nothing's impossible. So that's one thing to take away. But I love the fact, if I just recall what you've spoken very diligently about, is you've identified various different land types, various different things to look out for, and various different things to be aware of, i.e. timescales. If I had to push you for any other key advice, I mean, I know you're going to have loads, but if you had the most common mistake you see people make or anything like that, do you have anything, any other top tips for the listeners if they're looking to go down this route?
I believe this is a strategy that you need to have someone around you that knows what they're doing. I'm not saying all the other strategies don't. I can only tell people about this because this is what I do. So that's point one. Have someone next to you or around you, which is what I had, much older than me, that I could pick the phone up to. There wasn't such a thing as a mentor, okay? But that's what you call them, right? But I didn't pay for it. To say, I'm looking at this, I'm not quite sure what to do, this is what I think I need to do, can you help? Do not be afraid to reach out for help, point one. We've also covered being around someone older and wiser and more experienced. Point two, I've learned as I've got older that I don't listen to the doubters, of which there are still plenty. And normally they are people either in your family or in your close circle. Mm-hmm. Because those are the people that believe nine to five is where it's at. I have nothing against that, but it depends how far you want to go. How far do you want to push yourself?
Yeah, makes perfect sense to me. Again, these are things I totally agree with. So you're preaching to the converted. Absolutely. Would there be anything else that you could think of at all, Jerome? Anything else that you haven't already mentioned?
So just expanding on what we've just discussed about top tips, I actually believe there is a lot to be said for going on a training course. Up until 2 years ago, I knew nothing about training. We do have our own training program, which I'm not on this to push. I believe there is a lot to be said for actually being trained, because effectively what you're doing is you're learning how to get from A to B quicker than it takes. Uh-huh. But there is no substitute for the real thing, of course.
No, of course not. Getting out there, getting stuck in and actually doing it is the best thing to do. Well, Jerome, I mean, that's a fascinating insight into what I would class as the basics. And obviously, I mean that in the most respectful way possible. If people want to find out more about yourself or Property Planning Game, which is your company, how do people get in touch with you?
Okay, so Instagram, Property Planning Gain is the handle. Facebook is Property Planning Gain. The website's propertyplanninggain.co.uk. We believe in providing authentic, genuine, real, educational, bite-sized clips, posts, reels on all our pages.
Perfect. And as always, we will put those links and so forth in the show notes so you're able to get contact Jerome as well. Well, Jerome, again, massive thank you. Thank you for explaining a lot of things. I learned a lot from that, and hopefully listeners have had a lot of value from this podcast. I think it'd be great maybe at some point moving forward to have you back on, and maybe we can go in depth into a couple of different things. If you're up for that, you know, that'd be fantastic.
Thank you for having me on. And that's definitely something that I'd like to explore with you at a later date, Robert. It's been a pleasure.
Perfect. Well, until next time, thank you very much for listening. Do contact Jerome as well. And if you're going to go into land development, as Jerome said, even if it's just the one person that takes that action and goes out and does it, you know, we're here to add as much value to you as possible. And, you know, Jerome definitely done that today. So thank you very much, and speak soon.
Thank you.